You're about to listen to a Second City Works presentation, brought to you in partnership with WGN Radio. Subscribe on your favorite podcast streaming platform or listen on WGNRadio.com. And be sure to share.
A few housekeeping notes before we start today's episode. I'll be talking with Arianna Huffington for an upcoming webinar that will be all about our newest collaboration with her group, Thrive Global. If you're interested in watching, please send an email to events@thriveglobal.com. On Thursday, March 5th, I'll be hosting a live podcast taping with Katie Borum-Chatou and Lauren Feldman about their new book, A Comedian and an Activist Walk into a Bar. We'll be taping at the Second City, and you can sign up on the Facebook page for the Second City Training Center. Just click on the events link. And on March 19th, I'll be hosting a webinar titled Developing Leadership at Every Level, an Improvisational Approach. You can sign up by going to www.secondcityworks.com, click on the feed, and scroll down to find the link. The Second City is a world-famous comedy theater, and it got so famous because it has produced generation after generation of comedy superstars. That didn't happen by magic. Second City's improvisational pedagogy fuels great performance, and the same practices that made stars of everyone from Bill Murray to Tina Fey can be applied for success offstage, at work, at home, and in the world. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Applied Improvisation at the Second City. This podcast is about collaborative conversations, seeking connections, and finding a better way. This is Getting to Yes And.
Days can't be counted by the money spent. Today was just another better left unsaid. Days can't be counted by the time to rent. Tomorrow's just another like the one that comes next. The corner of the highway that leads to the job at the desk by the boss with the elegant watch. The tick of the clock and the tick of the clock mark the moments till the ticking stops.
My guest today on Getting to Yes And is Allison Holzer. Allison is the co-founder and chief innovation officer of Inspire Corps. She's a board member of Conscious Capitalism Connecticut, and she's worked with the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence. In her work with all these organizations, she trains, coaches, and develops curricula on such topics as emotional intelligence skills, applied positive psychology, and effective leadership. Her interpersonal style is collaborative, supportive, and service-oriented. She uses her curiosity and love of learning to translate research and evidence-based practices into concrete, user-friendly knowledge about health and well-being. She has a new book that she co-authored with Sandra Spataro and Jen Grace Barron. It's called Dare to Inspire, Sustain the Fire of Inspiration in Work and Life. Allison Holzer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kelly. Thank you so much for having me.
I think the phrase, words are important, can't be said enough. And in the case of this book, you and your co-authors spent some serious time trying to find the right word for the research and the learning you wanted to focus on. So tell us what the word inspiration means in the context of your work.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey as when we first began looking at inspiration as a concept, we really started to define it differently than how I think people typically think of inspiration. And I'll just back up and say a little bit about how we got into the business of looking at inspiration, which is, you know, we were working with clients and working with organizations and trying to understand, you know, what really makes the difference in terms of an average day and an extraordinary day. In terms of average, you know, performance or teams working together or an extraordinary connection that teams have. And this word inspiration kept coming up again and again. But when we looked at the literature, we really didn't see a lot out there in terms of inspiration and how it functions in the workplace.
Right.
So we went out and we started interviewing folks and really learning from these interviews. And what we discovered is that, you know, I think a lot of people think of inspiration as like a, you know, bursty, kind of exciting, intense emotion. And, you know, it's fleeting and then it sort of goes away and you don't know if it can happen to you or not. Right. And what we found is inspiration is really the intersection of these two different things that happen. So one is that when you're inspired, you have this greater sense of possibility, new ideas are open to you that you didn't previously think were possible. And at the same time, you have this greater sense of what we call invincibility. And by invincibility, we don't mean like superheroes jumping off their buildings kind of invincibility, but we mean a heightened sense of courage and confidence that you can go out and make those new possibilities happen. And so as you can imagine, when you put these two together, you have this greater sense of possibilities and this heightened courage and confidence to make things happen, it leads to these extraordinary results, which is what we were seeing again and again. You know, what makes the difference between an average day and an extraordinary day, an average, you know, career or experience at work and an extraordinary one.
And I think it's interesting, you know, first of all, because this is different than purpose and it's different than awe, though those things I think are all part of the conversation. When you talked about the flip side of inspiration being burnout, I think that's that helps define what it is as well as anything.
Yes, it totally does. Because, you know, yes, burnout is just this feeling of both, it's both physical exhaustion, but there's also this mental and emotional component to burnout, at least in the research literature shows us that, you know, there's almost this cynicism and, you know, it affects, you know, it's a cognitive kind of thing as well as a physical exhaustion. But on the flip side of that, inspiration, it's really having this strong sense of drive towards, you know, the areas in your life that matter most. So although it's different than purpose, it definitely allows you to enact your purpose more, right? Because when you're inspired, you're able to take action in the areas that matter the most to you.
Yeah.
And direct inspiration towards them.
It's intertwining agency, you know, with things like purpose and meaning, which is that's so related to improvisation, which has this idea, a central idea of, you know, yes and two ideas, but then it is tied to a practice. So it, you know, you're not improvising if you're not doing, but to be successfully improvising, you also have to be enacting all these core principles and ideas in the moment. So you talk in your book about three ways that inspiration gets sparked. It's sparked by you, by others, and by situations. So can you talk to us a little bit about the three different areas?
Yeah. So this was interesting to us because, to your point earlier of, you know, it involves action, it involves doing things, right? It sort of debunks this idea of inspiration as being passive or something that, you know, may or may not happen to you, or, you know, oh, it's only for the special few who are, you know, maybe creative and, you know, they might have an inspirational muse that comes to them. And what we found was that there were these three key access points or pathways that people can look to actively bring inspiration forward. And so the first area, so three areas are personal, what we call engines of inspiration, or ways that you can cultivate inspiration via yourself individually. The second area has to do with relationships and other people. So looking to the people around you, which I imagine overlaps probably a lot with improv.
Sure does.
And the third area is environments and situations, which I actually think is probably the most novel in terms of, you know, people maybe don't necessarily think about the environment around them or situations that they don't always have control over as being places that they can look to for inspiration. But what we found is that there are these three pathways. And so when you know them, you can begin to think about, all right, if I'm going and I'm looking to practice and cultivate inspiration more in my work, in my life, so that I can use inspiration and drive it towards, you know, extraordinary results, then I have these three ways that I can do that. And some people tend to lean on, you know, one of those three areas more than others. You know, some people are more individual and they say, okay, no, I need to look inward to feel inspired. I need to think about my purpose, what matters to me. I need to feel that sense of progress. You know, and that's what inspires me. Whereas other people are really relationship oriented, and it's about, you know, looking to the people around them to lift them up and give them that boost, or having that shared sense of purpose, you know, or that energy that you get when you're around other people and you can feel that boost of invincibility and possibility when those around you are inspired. And then there's some people who are really, you know, sensitive to their environments. Mm-hmm. And I always think that's interesting, too. Like, some people, they need to go into nature. They need to, you know, they need a certain kind of light. You know, they are sensitive when they're going into situations to notice and observe what's going around going on around them. And when they notice that, they might be inspired to then take action. So knowing those three pathways, I think, gives people a lot of options in terms of where they can look for inspiration.
There's a thing you write in the book, quote, engineering opportunities to see things in a different way. I love this concept. Clayton Christensen passed away this week, who's the disruptive guy. And what you're talking about here is disrupting yourself. So, you know, we love our stories. We use our stories to make sense of the world around us. Our stories are not, you know, we're unreliable narrators at best. And we tend to see things in the patterns that we've always seen them. And so we have to find ways to get, almost in improv, we talk a lot about getting out of our own way. And there's some of that you talk about in the book.
Absolutely. It's clearing some of that noise. It's knowing where you have those confirmation biases, as you said, you know, that we can get stuck in our own beliefs and our own narratives. So I think one thing that relates to what you just brought up is this idea of inspiration as an emotion and inspiration as a mindset. And we really see it in both ways, because certainly inspiration can be, it is an emotion. It can be an emotion that you feel. And in that context, you know, it gives you that boost, you know, and inspiration as an emotion is highly contagious, right? You can feel it in other people around you. But at the same time, the key idea that came forward when we did our research is that it can, in addition to being an emotion, it can also be a mindset that you adopt, an inspiration-based mindset. And this is how you get to really more of the practice of it, the sustainable inspiration. Because when you think about inspiration as a mindset, it's more about the narrative. It's more about, you know, am I seeing the situation from an opportunity to, you know, craft a narrative that is inspiring to me about this situation? Am I, you know, looking to my week ahead and being thoughtful in how I plan it so that I'm tapping into things that I know will feel inspiring to me on a regular basis? So it's more of a planning kind of mode and a thoughtful mode where you're really being attuned to, on a day-to-day level, how connected you are to what inspires you. And it may not be that you're feeling those hot, sparky, high energy inspiration emotions every minute of every day. You know, that might be exhausting.
Right.
But you're able, what it allows you to do is it allows you to tap into those emotions more readily and more quickly and more intentionally when you need them.
I think we have a mutual friend, Scott Barry Kaufman. We've talked on the podcast a lot about post-traumatic growth, and you and I had an email exchange about this yesterday, but you talk about how grief can be an opportunity for inspiration. And that I had read that early, when I finished the book over the weekend, and then my wife Ann and I, and my listeners know about this, we lost our daughter Nora to cancer August 1st. But yesterday, Ann and I led an improv workshop for nurses, oncologists, palliative care, many of whom were our friends at Lurie Children's Hospital. And it was this sort of amazing hour where we were saying, you know, here's the stuff that we've learned. It's backed up by evidence, but this is how we used it to create an ensemble of our caregivers to see all obstacles as gifts, which is an improv thing, and to make meaning in the space where you could easily allow yourself to go the opposite route. And for me, like, this is part of my grieving process, is trying to, like, lean into what I am grateful for and what I can give back.
Yes. And I think it's about tapping into that meaning and looking for those ways to you know, to share with others and to bring others into community. You know, this area of inspiration, it was surprising to us. We weren't, you know, necessarily expecting when we went out to interview and to research and talk to leaders about what inspires them in their work, really. I mean, that was our primary focus in our conversations. And, you know, but I think more and more we understand that our work lives and personal lives are right, you know, almost one and the same, right? I mean, who we are as people, it's just who we are as people across
right,
all domains. And so this theme came up again and again for us and the leaders that we talked to about, you know, about the difficult situations, you know, major losses they experienced, and how they really, you know, were able to tap into those situations in ways where, you know, of course they were, it was difficult for them, and they wanted to take that memory or situation forward in a way that could inspire others. So one of the folks that we mentioned in the book, Joe Casper, he lost his son, and it really just stood out to us when we interviewed him, because he said that, you know, we asked, what's most inspiring to you? And he said that for him, it was keeping the memory of his son close to his heart at all times, and that it's both a process of grief for him, but it's also inspiring to him because it calls him forward to be courageous in ways that he otherwise may not be. And that's part of what we look at in terms of inspiration. It's stepping out of your comfort zone. It's stepping into new possibilities and new ways to positively influence others in the world around you.
Yeah. So in addition to the program that we're looking to start at Lurie, Nora School is dedicating their new outdoor space, and she goes to a Waldorf school. So it's really like going to be a sort of magic place. And so literally about 10 minutes before we started recording, one of the teachers, her teacher, sent me a text that her daughter had sent to her. I'm just going to read it because I think it's cool, and I think you'll like
it. Love it, yeah.
She goes, "I should acknowledge that this whole conversation with my mother is probably colored by the fact that she is speaking at a playground dedication tomorrow. The playground is being dedicated to Eleanor Leonard, who I knew as Nora. Nora was all on her own and independent of anyone's influence, a disciple of the skin-knee philosophy. My memories of her involve wood chips in her hair and stuck to her Hannah Anderson leggings, yelling often at her older brother and or a stuffed pug, and falling, jumping, and rolling over couches. Cushions in a way that looked equally alarming and joyful. Nora was born without vanity, and she was a spitfire and had a million other qualities that in the gospel of her mom, Andrea Schaefer, are indispensable. She's being honored with a place for more children to fill their shoes with wood chips and stones and to learn by falling and rolling and alarming the adults watching them."
Oh my gosh.
How beautiful is
that? Beautiful. I'm emotional right now as you're reading that.
Yeah, it's okay.
And,
I mean, that's
it's
that and that's where we find this inspiration, where we can
absolutely.
There was a grief journal I was reading that sort of said ways you can sort of get over your grief or things like little tricks, and one of them was consider the world where that person was never born. Powerful.
Wow.
Because you don't you don't wish that. You would never wish that, which must mean you and lean you into sort of meaning. And so it's just interesting because I didn't expect this at all in this kind of book. And it came up and I'm like, oh, that's I like it because it gives some architecture to something I'm going through right now.
And Nora is inspiring. I mean, Nora is inspiring,
right?
And you know, clearly in this, and you know, and it's carrying forward into the community.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because you talk about body, mindset, emotions, and I tweeted this and put it on LinkedIn. I know you saw it because I got a ton of response. But you quote Susan David, who says, "Quote: discomfort is the price of admission to a meaningful life." This shit ain't easy. And that's kind of the point.
Yes. It's so true. It's so true. I love Susan David. I love her work. And I appreciate you bringing all of this to the forefront, because I think, again, there is a misconception around inspiration, as sometimes you hear it referred to, you know, in commercials and, you know, scroll on, you know, Instagram, or go look for ideas on get inspired, that it's used in that way. But, you know, what we're talking about is really a lot deeper than that. And inspiration is not all about, you know, this emotion that's about kind of unicorns and roses and all fluffy and positive. You know, we can be inspired by really difficult situations and emotions. And it's really in the process of how we look to those emotions to guide us and how we tap into them and create meaning from them. And again, it's about this inspiration mindset. So how will I understand those experiences and emotions in ways that will allow me to have greater possibility and greater courage and confidence to have this positive impact in the world? And that's the inspiration that we're talking about, right? It's tapping into that power.
So what are some of the enemies of inspiration?
Yeah, so we talk in the book about different types of enemies of inspiration, and it really does fall along the research lines in terms of burnout. So, yeah. You know, there's sort of physical, emotional, and mental. And I think the thing that people don't pay attention to the most is the physical side. No, I think people don't maybe always give the weight that they could to how much their physical energy can influence both how they're thinking about things and their emotional reserve and capacity. And so I honestly think that's one of the biggest areas that I think I'd love for people to make that connection and to focus on that more. You know, really seeing their physical energy as a source to, you know, have them be really primed and ready to feeling more inspired on a day to day. And knowing that if they're not, if they're either overtired or, you know, maybe not, some people really need a lot of activity. They need movement, to feel that sense of energy, and that all of that fuels the likelihood and opportunity for them to actually tap into inspiration as a resource for them.
Yeah, well, Arianna Huffington would agree with you.
Yes, she would.
The other one that I you written out here, I bring this up on, I don't know, so many podcasts. I'm like, is multitasking a thing? No, multitasking is the enemy, right?
Yes, it is. We do talk about that in the book. It is.
But like, we're constantly being asked to multitask.
Yes, we are. It's really challenging. And you know what? It's not, I don't think that we can necessarily avoid it. You know, I think there are some levels where, you know, some types of work and times when you just have to multitask. But I think from an inspiration practice standpoint, one of my key insights around that was this idea of, you know, really building in resets, which we talk about in the book, but also blocking time that you have, that's really time for whatever it is that gives you that breathing room to feel inspired. Now, for me, one of our engines of inspiration we talk about in the book, and this came out of a conversation, interview we did with a former professor that I had when I was at Dartmouth, neuroscience background, and he was super inspiring to me, and I was so happy when he said yes to an interview. And he talked about this idea of unstructured time. And it's sort of like the opposite of multitasking, right?
Right.
So in multitasking, it's like the time, you're just trying to be as productive as possible in the shortest amount of time. And on the flip side of that, in unstructured time, the idea is that you have no agenda. You're trying to not accomplish anything. And you're leaving the time open to see what unfolds. Now, what's interesting is from a neuroscience standpoint, he talked about how this actually can prime you so that inspiration is more likely to occur in these unstructured time, you know, these blocks of time. And that's something that I think, you know, maybe all of us have, you know, had times where, you know, you get an idea when you're in the shower or, you know, you're on a long road trip drive and you all of a sudden, bam, you get this great idea to solve this problem at work that you had been chewing on for months and months. And so I think people get that, you know, it happens to them, but they don't necessarily see it as a place where they could actually consciously say, you know what, I actually need unstructured time in my week. And if I actually build in, I mean, it's kind of ironic, I'm going to structure unstructured time. But the idea is that you structure time where you don't have an agenda.
So,
and by doing that, you can tap into it.
I have an example of that I use. So
sure.
It was the anniversary, I forget, the 10th anniversary of TEDx Broadway. And I did one of the first ones there. It was my first TEDx talk. And it went really well, but I had scripted it out in advance. And I'm not an actor. I'm a terrible actor. And I went up on my lines and basically had to improvise the second half of it. Luckily, I'm a fairly decent improviser. So I got through that and no one really knew. But I didn't, and I got, and so I got picked to do another one, and I was like, shit, I don't want to do this again because I know I'm not going to memorize the script well. And I was talking to Adam Grant, and he has research around daydreaming and giving yourself this opportunity to do exactly what you're talking about. So he's like, look, you should find time, schedule time to just walk around and think of your stories and think of what your thing is, and then you'll be able to beat it out. You can have an outline, but you'll just kind of go, and then if you need to veer, you veer. And so the next talk I did, it was so less stressful. It was so more successful because I was kind of meeting myself with my ideas where my skill was. And that unstructured time was really, I was doing good, deep work. And I think you referenced Cal Newport in this book. I don't know if it's another one I'm reading, but you know, he has all his stuff around sort of deep work, and that more and more, because of our devices and other stuff, we get away from that. And some of that does involve just sitting around and thinking.
That's right. Yes. And I think one of the things I loved in discovering this important engine of inspiration is it sort of gives permission to say that time is important. And even if it's just a small chunk of time, that you have, but it really is an important process that fuels a different kind of result. You know, as you described in your example, it fueled a different result for you to have that time to feel inspired and then to bring that energy to your talk. But a lot of times I think there's this idea that multitasking is somehow more quote unquote productive, and that if we take this time to go daydream and walk and have unstructured time, that it's somehow unproductive.
Yeah,
love to debunk that.
All right. So in a moment, we're going to ask you for your yes and story. But before we do that, I do want to talk to you a little bit about leadership. In the book, you talk about these different leadership styles, innovator, an advocate, a driver, and a pillar. But what I really like is what you say in the book, which is this, quote, "What agility looks like in action is balancing and combining leadership styles in the moment," end quote.
Yeah.
That is so true, because I think we forget that there's no one context for being a leader, and it requires you to, like good leaders at least, shift in the moment for what's needed.
Yes, absolutely. And it's part of that intentional inspiration process, because what it requires is being able to look at those around you and looking at the situation to be able to real-time assess what is needed in this situation. So it is improvisational for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then be able to shift your style appropriately to be able to generate the kind of impact that you want on others. And we often talk about the physical body as being one of the quickest ways to shift styles, because it's almost more immediate and accessible than saying, okay, I'm going to think myself into, a blending of these two styles. It's kind of hard to do that, at least at first. And so, we often will work with leaders on, physical body and how their body movement can help them shift and blend different styles in this way.
100%.
I would also say, we've run this exercise where we'll interview people and ask them about the leaders who inspire them the most in their lives. And then we'll ask them to share key characteristics of what inspired them about those leaders. And we've done this exercise, hundreds of times. And when they share the characteristics of what inspires them in those leaders, we will map them across these four different areas that you mentioned, these four different styles. And without fail, almost always the leaders who inspire people the most cross over two, three, if not all four, of those different areas when people speak to their qualities. And so I think it does speak to the fact that, people are inspired by different diverse styles, and that people who are able to be diverse across different styles are then able to, connect with and inspire, a larger group of people.
Okay. We always end the podcast with this question. We want to see if you have a yes and story. So in the parlance of improvisation, people are making something out of nothing, and you can't do that by saying no. And you can't really do that just by saying yes. You have to say yes and. You have to affirm and contribute in order to explore and heighten. Do you have a yes and story for us?
Yeah, I do. I have to give a little background context on it first, if that's okay.
Yep.
Which is that, so for the last couple years, I've been working a bit with Matthew Dix, who is the author of the book Storyworthy. He's a moth storyteller, and really specifically in the domain of work, because the ability to share stories and, you know, the kind of work that I do and workshops and talks and things. It's a really important part of my work. And that's usually what we work on. But more recently, he's been really encouraging me to kind of push on sharing stories that are more personal, more vulnerable, which for me, is not necessarily my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyways, we worked on the story a while back that was about a time that I was in, it's called Governor's Scholars Program in Kentucky. I call it dork camp because that's kind of what it was.
Yep.
You know, think like band camp, but without any of the instruments.
Oh, God.
And, you know, when I was there, I, you know, was socially awkward and had a big crush on this guy named Kyle.
Kyle.
And I just I didn't quite know what to do with myself. And Kyle was taking this course on teen pregnancies where he had to carry around one of those mechanical babies that cry and pee, you know, yeah. So anyways, I did this big embarrassing thing where I kidnapped the mechanical fake baby and I kind of ran away with it and everybody got upset and, it went to admissions and, you know, it became this thing where they were going to expel me from dork camp, which would have been really embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, not the most flattering story. Well, I had an opportunity to, someone approached me to actually tell this story publicly. And I got to be honest, you know, this was a moment where, okay, I'd kind of written this and, you know, it was fun to write, but I never thought that I would actually publicly share this this story. And so my initial reaction was capital N, capital no, you know, not.
No.
but I ended up saying, yes. And for me, the and part was, not only saying yes to, I'm going to put myself out there, be vulnerable, share a story I wouldn't normally share, and really engage with the community and some of the co-producers and, you know, some of the other storytellers to be able to do this. And, you know, I got to be honest, when I showed up, I was the only woman, first of all. I was the only first-time storyteller. Everyone was very experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also the first person, the only person there who wasn't a professional comedian.
Mm.
And I'm not funny. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, this is another opportunity for me to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in the moment I had to say, I really pushed myself and said, nope. You know, I ask my clients to be courageous every day. That's like my job.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, even though I'm way outside my comfort zone here, I'm going to say yes and I'm going to do it. It definitely put me way outside of my comfort zone. And my big learning from that was that it can actually feel inspiring, you know, I felt inspired in the moment, by the community around me, by also the opportunity to be vulnerable and share something. You know, I talk in front of people, I talk with groups a lot, and that's a comfort place for me, but not a comfort place to share a story like that. So,
And how was it received?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. It was fun. Yeah. We had a really good time. And I think I learned from that. You know, just to be myself and, it's okay to show those kind of quirkier sides that we have.
People cut you a lot of slack when you are vulnerable with them. They really do. I think this is a positive aspect of humanity that we forget about in the noise, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's like we're all, in the end, we're all human beings.
The book is called Dare to Inspire, Sustain the Fire of Inspiration and Work in Life. Allison Holzer, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
Getting the SAN is produced by Second City Works and WGN Radio. Our editor and producer is L.F. Garris. We get support at the Second City from Jenny Crowley, Abby Bumbledare, Mike Farinaccio, and Colleen Fahey. The music you hear at the beginning and end of the show is by Jukebox the Ghost. If you have questions, guest ideas, or if you want more information on working with Second City Works, you can go to www.secondcityworks.com or you can email us directly at works@secondcity.com.
feet.
Survive.